Chapter 23.
My attendants did a good job at keeping things quiet, but it didn't take long for the girls to stop volunteering. I was never gentle with them, yet I still believe they came willingly, at first. The truth was that my attendants coerced the girls that caught my eye, whether out of loyalty, a lust for my favor, or a belief that a happy ruler led to a happy empire. My servants saw to my every whim. They bribed at first, but eventually devolved into threats and acts of violence. As my people slowly started to fear me more and more, often through acts I did to achieve that very purpose to ensure obedience, a nightmare slowly began to grow among the young women that they might catch the eye of the Emperor.
Lyra continued to follow the scent of the boy Vigilante, the blackened son of Daedalus the Conqueror. "I think he went to the skyport," she said to Cuseg beside her. "Then we find which ship they take and follow." "That's the plan," Lyra said, as they quickened their step. The people continued to part before them, more so now as they moved with obvious purpose. As they came close to the skyport, Lyra noticed a man standing atop a box and speaking passionately to a crowd of people. She stared at him. "What is it?" Cuseg asked. "Go ahead and find the portmaster. I'll catch up." Cuseg looked to the soapbox man. "Ah, this again. Do not make too much trouble," he said, then left for the port.
"It was the Conqueror who made our nation strong," the Dawnist bellowed over the boos and jeers, though there were a few in the crowd who seemed to be truly listening. The young man wore a dirty buttoned shirt and slacks, but no sword, and especially no red ribbon, as wearing one would justify people challenging him to a duel just to shut him up. Lyra couldn't help but listen to a little of the tripe.
"Indeed, Hamara would have been destroyed by our own aristocracy, but it was the Conqueror who liberated us. And then after that, the other nations flew in like drakes to take our lands. Who was it that fought them off? We all know who. The same man who saved us from starvation and ensured we were always fed. These days we regular people starve, and the Senate not only does nothing, they are complicit. Why? Because their pockets get lined with gold crowns by those who force us to work in their factories like slaves." The Dawnist pointed to the well-dressed people in the crowd booing at him. "Of course they don't want the Empire back, because people like them couldn't exist in it. In the Empire, everything was owned by all. Not the greedy few that steal money from our own pockets. Not that it's much. Barely 7 measly rue pennies an hour while they hoard all the wealth that we make for them," he roared to the crowd. "Then there's the guilds, who don't allow the common man to learn their trades and charge a fair and honest price for skilled labor. The Emperor fought the guilds to regulate them properly, and what did they do? They rose up against him. Under the rule of Daedalus the Conqueror, each man got his fair share, and no man could make himself better than another."
"Except for the Conqueror himself," Lyra said calmly, but with light bonded to her voice, it carried over the crowd, silencing everyone. The Dawnist gulped. It seemed he hadn't noticed Lyra until this moment. "He put himself above everyone and killed for the slightest inconvenience," Lyra added, her controlled tone resonating powerfully. "Anyone who thinks to bring back the days of the Dawn Empire is a fool. You say everyone got their fair share? I lived through that time and you did not. So let me tell you what it was truly like. The great bastard took everything from everyone and returned the barest portion. Yes. All were equal. Equally oppressed, poor, and starved. No one could own property or land, not even their homes, and thus when the great bastard felt a population had outgrown the resources of their land, he forcefully relocated countless families and executed any who resisted, women and children included. Lyra began to walk toward the man. Later, he ordered his men to execute the family members of anyone he deemed a criminal, killing innocents for the most inconsequential actions that he thought rebellious. You glory in the privilege of attacking the government while espousing a way of rule that would have you executed for the same. Even those that didn't speak out against him were forcefully conscripted into his armies and sent to die in the unjust wars he declared on innocent nations. Lyra was now standing directly in front of the Dawnist. Most people think the Arch-Knights are only sworn to fight against the Shade, but our true mandate is to protect the peoples of the world. We, the Knights of the Arch Order of Light, declared war on the Dawn Empire. Do you know what that means? The man was failing to look defiant, though he tried. He stumbled back off his box. It means that the Dawn Empire had grown to threaten all of Telos, and the Arch-Knights, for the first time in their existence, entered into a political conflict. The Dawn Empire drew every nation into war. It became an enemy to all that is good. And you want to bring it back? Every other Dawnist Lyra had confronted like this had said no, claiming they were only supporting the good that the Dawn Empire did, not the bad. But this man forced himself to stand tall and replied, "Yes, and you Arch-Knights betrayed yourselves in fighting against our rightful ruler. The impure elements must be purged, and I cast night upon you and your order." Lyra couldn't believe what she was hearing. This young man actually had a measure of light within him, meaning he honestly thought what he was doing was the right thing, which made him very dangerous. "Then you have a powerful enemy," Lyra said, and turned to the crowd. "I can see that most of us here wish this fool would stop speaking his hate. But taking away his freedom to do this would make us as bad as the great bastard himself. We cannot stop him from speaking, but it's our choice to listen. Like a disease, our displeasure brings him joy. And I've done this too by confronting him. I see that I was mistaken. What I do now is what I hope you all do. Ignore him. Take away his power, and let the fool cry to the empty air." Lyra left, and thankfully most left with her, the Dawnist calling out after them in a frantic voice, "You cannot stop us! The Dawn Empire will return, and though you choose to leave, others will listen and join our cause! Long live the Dawn Empire!" The people ignored him, but the disappointing thing was that Lyra knew it wouldn't last. Most people were so insecure in their beliefs that they couldn't resist defending them, sometimes violently, in reaction to the smallest disagreement. Thus, as soon as more people heard the Dawnist preach such offensive dogma, they'd stop and argue, fueling the fool's ego. Then, with a crowd there like a herd of goats, more people would come, including some who'd actually be susceptible to the Dawnist's lies. Yet there was no more Lyra could do unless the Dawnists broke the law. Considering their patron, they might be capable of some truly terrible things. If that was the case, she and the Arch-Knights would be there to oppose them. It was easy to find Cuseg within the skyport. Just look for the only dark-skinned, yellow-haired, topless man with muscles like rocks.
"They are on a skyship," Cuseg began, but then stared at her. "Lyra, your face is different, and even me who is bad with faces, it is big enough to know. You are angry."
"It's the Dawnists."
"Yes, they need to be killed."
"They can't be killed for controversial opinions. That would make us no better than the conqueror.
Belief becomes action, and their belief is to kill people who do not agree. It is better to stop a crime before it happens.
But you can't punish a person who hasn't committed a crime even if they want to commit it.
This is stupid. If they want to do bad, they are guilty as if they did.
Only if you can prove it. And though it's clear what the Dawn Empire was, most Dawnists try and paint a much nicer picture. Everyone knows that they're preaching hate, but unless they incite criminal activity, it's not right to act against them.
No. If they are left to grow strong, it will be hard to stop them, and I will be there to tell you so.
I'm sure you will, Lyra said with a sigh. What were you saying before about the skyship?
The boy we are chasing. He is on a skyship to the head city of your land.
The capital, Lyra said.
Yes, the head city.
It's not called the head city. It's the capital, High Dawn.
Yes, your head city.
She shook her head tiredly. Whatever. Did you find out what type of ship they caught?
A trade ship, called Maraven.
Then it's slow, good. All we need is a fast ship, and if we fly under the floating isles, we should overtake them.
Yes, and we might find pirates as we fly,
Cusegg said, smiling. Feeling a little restless, are we?
Our powers need to be used. If not, we should not have them.
Yeah, with how frustrating this blackened chase has been, I'd like to hit something too. Lyra found the portmaster, a short, bearded man, and inquired after the fastest ship destined for High Dawn.
There's a Turasian trader destined for the capital, the man said. Name's the Takato or Tabato or some such. They're fast, those prig ships.
The man suddenly paused and looked to Cusegg embarrassedly.
My apologies, Master Archon. It was a slip of the tongue.
Cusegg simply glared at the man. The portmaster swallowed. We'll see to the ship, Lyra said. Thank you, Portmaster. Lyra looked to Cusegg once the man had left. A Turasian ship. Should I expect the captain to be as difficult as you? Cusegg's face was still. He glanced at Lyra, saying nothing.
What? Are you really that upset about the Portmaster saying prig?
No.
Then why so sullen?
What does this mean?
Upset.
I am not upset.
You could have fooled me.
Which is something too easy to do,
Cusegg said without any emotion, turning to walk out of the office. Lyra was shocked. Cusegg had said offensive things before, but this was the first time he had actually sounded cruel. What under the light had upset him so much?
Lyra caught up to Cusegg and they walked to the ship, not saying so much as a word to each other. The ship was crewed totally by Turasians in varying levels of undress, a few not even covering their private parts, with one or two women among them. Lyra's anxiety surged.
Oh, light! Really? She said to herself, purposefully looking at anything other than the crew. Rubbing her forehead, she sighed.
Cusegg, I need you to sort things out here.
Cusegg didn't reply.
Oh, light. I don't need this right now.
I will do,
Cusegg finally said, before walking toward one of the crew. The Turasian that Cusegg approached wore slim Turasian-styled boots that hugged his calves, which the man's extremely baggy pants, thank the light, were tucked into. Turasians seemed to prefer strong colors in their clothing, and the man was no exception, his pants being a deep red. He also wore a strange yellow half-jacket that covered the shoulders and upper back, but left the chest, arms, and waist completely bare. Although this Turasian had short yellow hair like Cusegg, he wasn't nearly as fit, which was easy to see considering Cusegg wore no shirt under his mantle,
his chest as bare as his countryman's. The other man's belly was round and pronounced, sitting happily out in the open for all to see, which surprised Lyra, for she had expected being fit was a cultural thing. His chest was still smooth, free of any hair, and shimmered in the light as if slightly oiled. The man was in the middle of loading some sacks aboard the ship. He noticed Cusack approaching and put down his load. He started to bow, but stopped halfway once he looked to Cusack's face, his expression blank. He straightened, still staring at Cusack's face, then at the Archknight mantle, and then back at his face. It was like the man didn't know how to respond. Cusack spoke to the man in their native tongue. The man, face still blank, backed away and boarded the ship. It was a very odd interaction, but then everything about the Eurasians was odd. Cusack returned to Lyra, and even though his face was blank, Lyra sensed a hint of satisfaction in his bearing. Shortly thereafter, a woman descended the gangplank from the deck of the ship, and she was naked. Well, mostly naked, for she wore the same styled Eurasian boots, and there was jewelry all over her body, brightly colorful, embroidered lengths of material looped from bangles at her wrists to thin golden chains around her waist. Yet nothing covered her private parts, and indeed, everything she wore, from the design and shape of the silver jewelry to its positioning, seemed to draw attention to those prominent features. She was slim and toned. Her brown skin was smooth and clean, devoid of all types of body hair, and her straight shoulder-length bright yellow hair was combed back to fall elegantly past her shoulders. She was beautiful. Still, the flagrant disregard for modesty made Lyra feel very uncomfortable, but not nearly to the anxiety-inducing level of the men's state of undress. Light! These Eurasians are backward! The woman approached Lyra, utterly ignoring Cusack, who was standing beside her, and smiled. A Eurasian? Smiling? Lyra hadn't expected that. The woman touched her fingertips to her forehead and then opened her arms out before her. When she spoke, it was in a very respectful tone, without the slightest hint of an accent. Lady Archon, your arrival and interruption is irritating, but because of your station, I offer you all the courtesy it deserves and will not express my profound annoyance beyond what I have said. Age has not diminished your physical beauty too much, though you are not as beautiful as I, and you do not appear to manipulate your appearance to influence men to your advantage, as is common among Hamaran women. Instead, it appears that you rely on the authority of your station for influence. I respect this.
Ah, Lyra began, nonplussed. Thank you?
The captain smiled in a very expressive way, and indeed, her face was more expressive than what seemed natural.
Excellent. I see we're good friends.
If you say so.
I do.
Lyra looked to Cusack, whose face was blank, and then back to the female captain.
We're here because we must commandeer your vessel.
The woman sighed.
This is profoundly irritating and has the possibility of affecting our friendship. In what capacity do you need my ship?
We must get to High Dawn as soon as possible.
Ah, this is much more acceptable. You've chosen my ship because we are already headed to your capital.
Yes, and because it's one of the fastest ships in port.
I am very pleased that you know this, and it makes me like you more.
Also, we must fly under the floating isles.
That, my friend, is very troubling. Regularly I would never risk such a flight, but with an Archknight's protection, I see no reason to fear.
Two. The captain tilted her head slightly.
Two?
Two Archknights' protection, Lyra said. The captain sneered, glancing at Cusig.
I find it despicable that one as shamed as you is a knight, forcing me to show respect that you do not deserve.
Cusig's face was stone, yet his tone betrayed strong emotion.
Yet I am Archon. You will show respect, or be shamed.
The captain continued to sneer.
I will show every courtesy as is expected, but I will continue to despise you regardless, Master Archon.
Cusig's mouth curled into the slightest grin, a triumphant shout by Cusig's standards.
Good, he said in satisfaction.
What was going on? Why was Cusig shamed? This was all very odd. Lyra had been expecting this woman to be the same as Cusig, but light, she couldn't have been more different, and yet so distinctly Turasian at the same time. She used expressions in a very pronounced yet calculated way, whereas Cusig rarely used them at all, and she voiced every thought. Cusig never hesitated to tell her what he was thinking, but compared to this woman, his comments were positively subtle, something Lyra never would have considered to be a possibility. The captain looked back to Lyra.
Please, come aboard. I am eager to reinforce your knowledge that Turasian skyships are the best in the world. I'll see that we embark at once.
They followed the captain aboard the ship, and Lyra had to keep her eyes on the deck as they walked to their cabin, with so many privates on exhibition. Once inside and alone, Lyra spun on Cusig.
All right. What under the light is going on? It does not matter. It is a thing of my people.
She said you're shamed. What does that mean?
That I am shamed.
You know that's not what I'm asking.
Cusig walked past her and sat cross-legged on one of the large cushions, facing away from her.
I will not talk.
It's that branding on your forehead, isn't it? None of the other Turasians have it.
This is my shame, Lyra. I will not talk.
Okay, fine.
Cusig didn't reply, and Lyra collapsed on one of the low and heavily cushioned beds, totally fed up with backward Turasians and their strange customs.